Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Media Group. I am Mags, and with me, as always, on this very, very special weekend recording, my podcast wife, Mr. Paul Tolley. Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm feeling good. Cheers, Mags. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Getting into the Christmas spirit, getting the last bits of our Christmas shopping done online because you can't go into stores because everywhere's locked down.
Yeah, I've been searching all over eBay for one of these vaccinations, try and get one early.
There's no hope for you, Welsh. We're cutting you off.
We're definitely last on the list. Welsh between the ages of 20 and 40, never getting it.
No, exactly. Paul, today we have got someone who I can't believe in all the episodes we've done, he's never been on this show. It's an absolute shock, and it's about time we rectified that. We've got one of the pillars of the Twitter wrestling community, one of the standout creators in our scene. It's Mr. Warren Hayes. Warren, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you for having me, both of you, on your show, Paul. What's your name? Mags? It's a thrill to be here. Thank you very much. And it has been a while. It's weird. But, you know, I've done a couple of your other numerous podcasts. So, you know, at some point I'm like, I've talked to Mags before. It's cool.
What a subtle dig. A couple of your numerous, many, many podcasts. So this is the first time you ever even really spoke to Paul. So yeah,
yes.
I'm making it my mission to get Paul on more people's podcasts. He's reluctantly accepting me as his booking agent.
I mean, I don't want to air dirty laundry here, but I think I understand your intentions, Max. But we've talked about having Paul on my show before, and you straight out told me, he's like, well, Warren, he's Welsh. So I'm like, what does that mean? He says, trust me, Warren, he's Welsh. I'm like, okay, fine. But I don't know exactly what that means. I know where Wales is. I understand, you know, that's fine. But you know, I'm not saying Max is trying to bury you, Paul. That's definitely not what I'm trying to say.
I would never do such a thing. Being Welsh is kind of like a blessing and a curse.
Kind of like being French Canadian.
Wow. So Warren, seeing as you've never ever been on Badlands, we need to hear your Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestlers of all time, so Paul, our resident accountant, can add your picks to our collated list. So who are the four greatest wrestlers according to Mr. Warren Hayes?
Okay, right, the greatest wrestlers of, because I thought it was the greatest wrestlers in my mind. Because that's a whole different thing. That's very, very different from the greatest wrestler, from Ric Flair, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels. You know, because what I consider to be the greatest in my mind, very, very different than what reality might want us to look.
That's the beauty of this, though, because the subjectivity of wrestling means that there's no wrong answers. So your greatest wrestlers.
Well, let's see. Let's see if we can. let's put that to the test here. On my Mount Rushmore. on my Mount Rushmore. Scott Putski. third generation wrestler, son of the great Ivan Putski. I think Scott's claim to fame was having a WCW World Heavyweight Championship title match on an episode of Nitro 1998 against then champion Bill Goldberg, who defeated him in 52 seconds. Now, the great thing here about Scott Putski is that he had done absolutely nothing of note to warrant a world championship match, and yet he got one. So that, to me, is the mark of a great wrestler. All right?
Wow.
A lot of people agree with you. That's his seventh pick.
That would have been awesome.
My number next on my Mount Rushmore, above average Mike Sanders. Oh, I appreciate a guy who decides to bill himself as above average. You know, I'm not great, but I'm better than most guys. And that to me is such a show of confidence in one's skill set, a level of self-awareness that multiple wrestlers are completely unable to have, even to this day. Mike Sanders, above average Mike Sanders, absolutely on the on my Mount Rushmore.
And a great pick.
thank you very much. Now, my next pick. Because they kind of go together, but I'm still going to break it down a bit. Scotty Riggs. Here's a guy. Listen, this is how genius your career goes here. This is a guy who starts off, like who really gets recognition. Didn't start, but gets recognition teaming up with Buff Bagwell in the American Males, right? And this is a guy who gets bigger than Bagwell while he's in the tag team. So they split them apart. And then what happens next? Arguably, Buff Bagwell becomes the bigger star once they're singles guys. And Scotty Riggs becomes a member of the flock. Of Raven's flock. Now, if you can't get behind that as just like pure kismet in wrestling trajectory of your career, I think it's great. You need a special skill set to be one of the American Males and then end up being, you know, covered in flannel and having your wet hair over your eyes. That's fantastic. And my last pick, legendary wrestler, AWA, WCW, NWA, Mike Enos. He's done it all. He's even been a referee. He's been he wore a mask to attack the I want to call them the skyscrapers, but that's not it. Shit, what were they called? it doesn't matter. But here's the thing. This is why I tie him in here with Scotty Riggs, because they had an absolutely horrible match on Clash of the Champions 1997. They're on a pay-per-view, and as you guys know, right, Clash of Champions. What does Clash of Champions mean? It means that all the champions are there, all the titles are defended. What title did Scotty Riggs and or Mike Enos have? None! So imagine, so this adds to Scotty Riggs' induction here as well. They didn't have a title, and they ended up on a pay-per-view where only champions are supposed to be fighting. And on top of this, they wrestled for about 2.5 minutes. And it was shit, guys. It was absolute shit. If you can't appreciate the effort, the career that Mike Enos had to reach this point and have a terrible match on an evening where he wasn't even supposed to be there in the first place, with Scotty Riggs, who was done with the flock, I believe, at this point. Good for Scott. I don't know what to tell you. That's my Mount Rushmore right there.
Wow.
Excellent. So we covered the actual greatest of all time. So what was the Mount Rushmore of your mind?
I just said above average, Mike Sanders, Scott Putski, son of legendary Ivan Putski. No, I'm kidding. If I were to do like a, I don't know, these things are really hard. They're really, really difficult. It's easier to come up with shit answers than legitimate ones.
I don't think we should give you a second chance to. I think they should go down in history as your official Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
And I endorse it. I'm completely okay with that.
We have to take people's first answers, right? Because God knows, I'd love to take
debuts.
And so you guys are, you're holding a list, you're holding like a spreadsheet of all these answers. I am thrilled that I was able to add above average Mike Sanders to a list of Mount Rushmores. I really do.
How many other votes has he got, Paul?
None. He's new to the list.
Frankly, that's how he's built, above average Mike's, and it's so fascinating to me that he has the self-awareness to say, look, I'm not great. You guys are going to accept me for who I am. I love it. I cannot not get behind that guy.
I mean, the average number of votes per person is 4.2, so he's not quite there yet, but...
Below average.
He's below average.
I'll make a case for him. I'll create a presentation deck in PowerPoint to back up my points. I'll make sure that he gets more votes.
The worrying thing is you convinced me that they all deserve at least a mention, and these were all terrible, terrible wrestlers.
He wasn't terrible. He was above average.
Clearly not. One vote over 4.1 votes is not above average.
Well, not yet. You have to let these things build. You know, it's like, at some point you're going to be, eventually he gets there. It's the little train that could. Choo-choo. Choo-choo, Mike Sanders. I'm all aboard the Sanders Express.
I guess if we add in every professional wrestler who's currently got zero, he might be above average.
See? Just about.
There you go. That's true, though. Like, Disco Inferno's not on your list, right?
He's not, thankfully.
So there you go. So he's instantly above Disco Inferno. Then again, you know, a can of rat poison is above Disco Inferno.
This is turning into a shoot episode. Wow. Before we start getting cancelled by the wrestling community, Paul, does Warren's picks in any way affect the current collated Mount Rushmore? I've got a feeling it does.
No, it's just slowed my laptop down a bit by expanding my spreadsheet.
Wow.
My picks got this crash Paul's laptop. I love it.
At least you've done something that hasn't happened since the very first episode. You've got four debutants on our collated list.
Hey, you know what? I think it's important. I think these guys should be kept in the conversation, or a conversation anyway. Any type of conversation.
Yeah, just in passing. A conversation in passing.
Yes.
But well, we're up to 73 people now.
Wow.
73 unique picks.
And 69 of them deserve it, and then obviously Warren's four.
What does that mean, Mags?
I mean, you've got a weird sense of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yes, I do. You did say wrestling is subjective, so...
I did. So if you were to have a second bat at this cherry, who would you put on the Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestlers of all time?
This is informal, because these are my official picks are these four guys.
Yeah, they're done. Okay. Yeah.
I think you go with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. I think you go with Ric Flair.
Never heard of him.
I think you go with Minami Toyota.
Nope.
And yeah, you do. Jeez. Shawn Michaels. No, Liger.
Oh. Now they could have made a big difference in the actual career to Mount Rushmore, but whilst they're not a patch on Mark Enos and Scotty Riggs, so
those would have made things really interesting, but the listeners will never know because I'm not tallying them.
This second list would have made things interesting. My first list was very interesting. You guys seem to, I don't know, feeling sort of weird being your guest right now, fellas. Starting to understand about the Welsh stuff now.
Getting political. So, Warren, for your main topic, me and Paul thought we'd go with wrestlers who have had success with multiple gimmicks. Yes. Now, by success, that's in the loosest sense possible. It doesn't mean they have to have been multi-time world champions, just they've appeared on a show or two as a different gimmick. So we'll go to...
And I promise... I'm much more legitimate here. I promise.
Are you casting aspersions that you may have not took the Mount Rushmore goat seriously?
No, I took it very seriously. No. Excuse me. I took it very seriously. The legitimacy of any list can be challenged, right? And I myself say, well, maybe you could challenge my four picks, but no, I took it very seriously, Max.
Would you say above average?
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. See how my expectations have been tempered? Fantastic.
So let's go on to this main topic then. Who's your first pick on the Mount Rushmore of multi-gimmick wrestlers?
Matt Hardy.
Oh.
And I think it's hard to create a list like this and not include Matt Hardy.
It's not that hard because I did it.
Me too. I didn't even consider Matt Hardy.
Oh, no. Really? Well, allow me to entertain you, gentlemen. From Team Extreme, right, to Big Money Matt, where he was flaunting his money, you know, it's, you don't know how hard it is to be Matt Hardy, you know, that stuff. Matt Hardy version one, which was a gimmick which was really ahead of its time because he was using the internet back in the mid-2000s to promote the Matt Facts. And that was a big, big deal. It was super innovative at the time. So, you know, Matt version V1, Matt Hardy version V1. I don't know if you guys even remember. I don't know if you'd call it a gimmick per se, but he had a feud in the late 2000s with MVP. And... They were doing all sorts of competitions against each other, basketball, pizza eating, yeah, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's like competition Matt Hardy. And then of course the cherry on top of it is broken Matt Hardy, right? Mm-hmm. Which revitalized his career and made him part of contemporary wrestling conversations to this day. The shadow of broken Matt looms large over his career at this point, and that's fantastic. This is it. He's done everything he could to remain relevant, to reinvent himself, to make sure that he wasn't remembered or forgotten, depending on your point of view, for just one thing. Knew that, you know, the Team Extreme thing could only go so far. Because he was getting old, his body was getting bruised, so on and so forth. So, and at the same time, he wanted to remove himself from that at the same time. You know, he didn't want to be the spot monkey all his life. And I can appreciate that. So, yeah, Matt Hardy, definitely on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, it's a great pick. It's one, like I said, I definitely didn't consider. But even his stuff in AEW now with the Matt Hardy Can't Die and Stronger Than Death stuff.
Sure.
I remember reading an interview with him just as he signed for AEW, and he said he's got dozens of characters like waiting in the wing. So, yeah, this is a guy who definitely can put his pull a character out of his magic hat and reinvent himself. So yeah, it's a great pick. Just one I didn't seem to consider.
No, me neither for some reason, but it is a great choice and is a bit of an obvious choice, really, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Paul, let's go to you for our first pick then.
Okay.
Imagine, I just want to put that up. Imagine if he had tried calling himself above average Matt Hardy. Jesus! How over would he have got?
Matt Hardy version 1.5.
Not quite version 2, but still a little better than 1.
Wow.
Okay, I surprised myself. It wasn't someone I immediately considered, but after doing a bit of research, I settled on John Bradshaw Layfield.
Mm. One of my picks. Yeah,
was it? Okay. He kind of entered WWE as Justin Hawk Bradshaw, a kind of cowboy gimmick, which earned a modicum of momentum and a pay-per-view match against Savio Vega. He was managed by Uncle, I don't know how to pronounce it, Zebekiah?
Yeah,
Zebekiah. Who was Dutch Mantel or Seb Coulter, the more recent fans. And kind of his gimmick at that time was to brand his defeated opponents with his initials. He was then paired with Barry Windham in kind of a similar gimmick to the previous cowboy gimmick in the new Blackjacks. And then came the real kind of first real gear shift into the Acolytes when he was paired with Ron Simmons, Farouk. And this is where Bradshaw became immensely popular in kind of for the first time in his brutal stiff. I presume they were devil worshippers. I've never really given it much thought, but were the Acolytes devil worshippers?
The symbols that they had on the chest were voodoo symbols.
Yeah. So kind of a perfect fit for the Ministry of Darkness, which was big at the time. And then obviously they changed their own tag team gimmick into the Acolytes Protection Agency, kicking anyone.
I love that. I absolutely. Oh, that brilliant. Was one of my favorite tag teams ever.
They were fantastic. They just ass kickers who would defend anyone who had the money and showed them mm-hmm. the decency to enter their office through the door.
That door.
That wasn't attached to any walls.
What a great running gag that was, though. Like, can you imagine then? It's like, and then, you know, the production team says, is told, yeah, you got to put that door on the truck now. This door frame is following us across country. You have to make room on the production trucks for this now.
It's brilliant. It just worked, though. I mean, I vividly remember one where Bradshaw forgot his keys to unlock the door, so he had to come round the door to get his keys to go back round the door to unlock the door. It was just comedy brilliant.
Yeah, it was really good. And the Acolytes went on to be 3 times tag team champions, which is a large amount of success in itself in a tag division that was really on fire at that time. But it's then when he went solo and kind of undertook the drastic gimmick change into a rich trader, kind of a gimmick that mirrored his real life, that I think he earned single success that I certainly wasn't expecting. I don't know if any of you guys were expecting him to go on to become a world champion when you saw him definitely in the Acolytes.
Not. Absolutely, definitely not.
No.
Of course not.
His first title as the newly christened JBL was with the Great American Award, which he won for hunting illegal immigrants on the Mexican border, which I'm sure it's a great honor of his. But this allowed him
sanctioned.
At least they treated it as a heel thing to do, right? Because something tells me in 2020, they'd probably try to angle him as a babyface.
Oh, absolutely. Doing that. Yeah. He would have got more than one world title if he'd done that in 2020. But it was his Great American Award allowed him to challenge Eddie Guerrero for the world title. He won their first encounter by disqualification, and then he won the title proper in a Texas bull rope against Eddie Guerrero, and then kind of surrounded himself with the cabinet, which is kind of ironic given his prior gimmick was the one providing the protection, and now he was surrounding himself with protection himself. Went on to hold the title for a staggering 280 days before losing to John Cena at WrestleMania 21. And although that was his only world title reign, he would go on to be kind of a top tier antagonist for the next decade. And he'd win the Grand Slam, adding the US and Intercontinental titles to his world and tag. And then into the Hall of Fame, which I think he's waiting on going into the Hall of Fame, isn't he? Wasn't he one of this year's class that got delayed?
Yeah, he was. It was named to be going in this year at WrestleMania, but it'll probably be next year's now.
Yeah. So I think to come so far from the Acolytes, which was already a very successful gimmick, and in my mind, I just see them as two completely different people. Mm-hmm. Like I have something in my brain can't compute that Bradshaw is JBL. So I think they're two very distinct gimmicks. So he deserves to be on there.
Yeah, and what a step up, though, like you said, from someone who was tag team, just royalty. You never would see him as a singles wrestler. I mean, he did have a good run in the hardcore division. I think he was that 18-time hardcore champion. But you would never have pictured him as carrying one of the major belts and to instantly transform into a title contender. Yeah, it's great work by him. I mean, look at some of the feuds he had as champion. You mean, for Undertaker, Booker T, Kurt Angle, obviously Cena, Big Show. So he didn't have an easy run as champion, and to still be able to hold it for more than half a year is testament to him, and it's a great pick.
Cheers. Is 18 hardcore championships above average for a hardcore champion? I feel like he probably isn't. Yes.
We'll have slightly, to run that by Max Sanders.
It's nothing if you compare it to a 24/7 title champion, you know. But hey, you know, it's above average. Yes.
So you did it in Curry Vito with that one, Paul. Let's go back to you, Warren, for your second pick.
My second pick is going to be the man they call Sting.
I have a feeling this is recency bias.
Frankly, I know it's a la mode right now to do it, but we were talking about doing the show before the Sting stuff happened on Dynamite at the moment that we're recording. This is already passed. And frankly, I had already decided about this because of course we know the Surfer Sting, right? That's fine. We know of him. That's how, you know, that's how he got his big break. Of course he was in a tag team before that. You know, he got his start with the man who would become the Ultimate Warrior. That's fine. But here's a guy who pretty much carried on his back as the top baby face of the NWA/WCW for years and years and years and years. He's a guy who was NWA television champion. He was NWA heavyweight champion. He was WCW US champion. Multiple time world champion. He even held that that international world heavyweight champion in a championship in WCW, if you want to remember that one. Of course, tag team champ with Lex Luger and all that stuff, right? The accolades of Sting we don't necessarily have to run them down. He's had a legendary career. And as we like to call Surfer Sting, despite the fact that we never saw him surf, he was the top baby face of that company or at least the territories, right, at the same time, and even in NWA. He was the guy who was at the top of the company. That's why he had so many matches with Ric Flair. It's because they were natural opposites, and they made money together. And Sting has always been one of the most over guys in the company, an objective draw at that period. What's that?
That's why he had the nickname the franchise player.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And multiple people have used it. but never to that extent either. You know, Shane Douglas called himself the draw. Well, you know, can argue. That's arguable. But in his case, absolutely. Like, he was the guy that he was one of their top guys. The big change happens in WCW. They hire Hogan. They hire Savage. The WWF guys start pouring in. Suddenly, new regime changes, so on and so forth. Sting isn't exactly the top guy anymore, or at least his position is redundant. Let's put it that. Let's use some good old corporate terminology here. His position as top babyface, happy-go-lucky, slap hands with the fans, baby-kissing babyface, is redundant. Hogan is there. Savage is there. Okay. Changes the dynamic a bit. And we sort of lose track of him for a while. Then he slips to the mid-card. We don't see him for a while. NWO happens. Where is Sting? What's going on? When he eventually returns, he returns with the gimmick that he's best known for, I guess, at this point. The crow stuff. With the bat. With the standing in the rafters watching the action, with the, you know, the zip lines, with coming out of nowhere and beating people up, taking out the entire NWO all by himself. When you talk about a reinvention like that, not only were people excited to see Sting back, because, you know, see, if you were a WCW guy and WCW faithful, of course you want your guy to come in and run off the NWO, these WWF invaders, essentially. You want him to come and run them off. And he comes, because now he's in this dark place because WCW abandoned him. They shoved him to the side when Hulk Hogan came in. It all made sense on top of it, Paul, Mags. It all made sense. Mm-hmm. So, of course, this is what we're going to remember mostly, you know, the transition, because that's the beauty of it, is that it's not just a gimmick change. It's a character change, and it all flowed so naturally. Everything connected, it made sense. Remember when wrestling used to make sense, guys? There you go.
So long ago.
But I think there was a peak that was achieved, and it's one that, unfortunately, not a lot of people are privy to just because of the nature of the beast. But Impact General Manager Sting is probably his most entertaining work. Are you guys familiar with that period of his career?
Yep.
I'm not.
He went insane. But like delightfully Joker insane kind of thing. His decision week after week, he just became enraptured and enamored with himself. The power went to his head. And he just completely lost it. So everything that you got to know about Sting, the dark, brooding, white face paint, baseball bat, trench coat wearing Sting, was completely out the door. Here you had a guy who was on camera giggling like a schoolgirl with Madison Rain, right? He just went completely nuts here. And is probably one of the greatest general manager characters the world of wrestling has ever had. I sincerely believe that, because he was just completely nuts. Completely nuts. And I loved it. He tried, he dared to do something absolutely different. From Surfer Sting to Crow Sting. Something you're like, wait, are we really going from this to this? The two extremes. Now we're going from, we're not just reverting back. In fact, he wasn't a babyface. We're not reverting back to a babyface mode. We're just going nuts. The years of wrestling have got to Sting. And that was fantastic. He barely wrestled anymore. That wasn't the point. The point is that he was just batshit insane. And I loved it. Absolutely fantastic. And that being said, you know, considering the recency of his return and so on and so forth, I'm super happy that he's come back. He brought back probably his most beloved gimmick, I'd say. which again is, it does add into my Rush, my Mount Rushmore-ishness, because if he can come back, what, 20 odd years after using, no, he did use it in Impact TNA. Let's say at least over a decade, close to two, but at least over a decade. If you can bring it back and people still remember it fondly and are excited to see it, that's the staying power of it. And that's on him for making it work, for making it iconic. He's had success with everything he's worked. And I'm glad that he's back. And I hope, I'm just thrilled that he's going to have an opportunity to go on his terms, because I don't think it's going to be, you know, I don't think we're going to see Sting wrestling every week on Dynamite, you know, wrestling super competitive matches against Private Party. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what he's there for. If he can come back to wrestling, go on his terms, get a proper farewell from the fans, that's what makes me happy.
It's another outstanding pick, and I think people kind of overlook how much of a sign of the times his change from Surfer Sting to Crow Sting was.
It was huge.
Yeah, the NWO get a lot of that, the praise of that kind of a tectonic shift in wrestling. But I think the look of Sting and the night and day change that character had, I think that kind of that rubber stamps that the direction WCW was going for and the kind of demographic they were aiming for, and Sting kind of personified that perfectly for me.
I think you make an excellent point. What's your name again, Mags?
I have points sometimes.
No, but I really do believe it's an excellent point, because everyone was like the NWO Hogan turning heel, you know, kind of thing. But if you were an NWA / WCW guy, one of these faithfuls, having Sting return without the blonde hair crew cut, without the colorful face paint, this was just as huge, if not bigger, for WCW fans, because this was such a transformation. It was a shift, a complete shift. And of course, leave it up to WCW to booking at the time to entice us with a Hogan Sting match for years, and then when we finally get it, give us an absolute shit show of a finish that never felt like the proper payoff for the feud. But it was still something absolutely enormous. And I'll just add this, because you made me think of this, Mags. You know, the reactions that we saw on Wednesday when Sting came back, and you know, people were like, "Oh, they bring back an old guy," you know, so Sting was never a draw, that kind of stuff. Look at how much WWE has controlled the wrestling narrative ever since they've been virtually alone. Sting did end up going to WWE, on the promise that he was going to have his match with Undertaker, which obviously never happened. But he just disappeared, and he became a non-entity, which is insane. But the minute WWE controls the narrative on wrestling history, this is the kind of stuff that will fall through the cracks. You cannot talk about wrestling history, the 90s, the 2000s, without talking about Sting. But if WWE decides not to talk about Sting, well, then we're not talking about Sting, and Sting is going to become a non-person, a non-factor in what we do as a wrestling company. And that's wild to me. So to the fans who didn't understand, or who just saw an old guy returning to wrestling, didn't get it. And I don't blame them for not getting it. I blame a single company who has been in control of the wrestling narrative for well over a decade and a half. So, and this is why it's another reason why it's so important that we do have another nationwide, hopefully soon to become worldwide wrestling promotion that can help balance this out and give us perspectives and different and recenter us on the true real history of professional wrestling, as opposed to one that's adjusted to fit whatever they're about to sell us, kind of thing.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. It's an outstanding pick, and I think the testament to Sting is the fact that there's fans who have never ever seen him outside of his very short run in WWE,
right,
who are excited about him coming to AEW. That shows the kind of the gravitas of the character, that people are still excited for him, even though they only remember him from 2 to 3 matches in the WWE.
Sure, absolutely.
So on to our second pick, and it's my first pick. Anybody who's ever listened to this show will know who I will be including mine, so I might as well put him out there first. I'm going to go with the legend that is Barry Darso.
Colour me shocked.
Did you realise I was going to go for Barry Darso, Paul?
I had no idea. Of course I knew you'd be going for Barry Darso.
Let's run down the gimmick master that was Barry Darso. So he started wrestling in the mid-80s, had a few short-lived gimmicks in that time. He was the Tsar Mongo. He was a kind of Russian / Mongolian overlord. Then he went to Georgia Championship Wrestling and started wrestling as Crusher Darso, who was a Soviet sympathiser. Eventually he would take the name of Crusher Khrushchev. And he had a great success in the territory system, winning singles and tag gold. He won tag titles with both Arvin and Nikita Koloff, won it with Paul Roma and also with Jim the Anvil Neidhart. But in the late 80s, 1987, the WWE came a calling, and they wanted their own version of the Road Warriors. So they'd originally drafted in Randy Coler and Bill Eder to play the characters, but when Randy Coler was wrestling, the fans were chanting Moondog at him because they recognised him as Moondog Rex.
Mm-hmm.
So Vince replaced Randy Coler with Barry Darso because he felt that he was a less recognisable wrestler and would be able to carry off the Demolition character in the face paint. So as part of this team, Smash, Barry Darso would break the record for the longest WWF tag team title run, which was a record for well over a decade until the New Day broke it recently. In all, Demolition were 3-time tag team champions, and they'd eventually add a third member to the crew when Crush was added to replace Bill Eder, who was suffering with long-term injuries and ill health. But after Demolition disbanded, Barry Darso went away for a little while before he came back with the best gimmick that there's ever been in wrestling, when he came back as Repo Man, who was a heel character who delighted in repossessing people's property when they missed payments. So as the Repo Man, he had a feud with Virgil when he was hired by the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase to repossess the Million Dollar Belt. He had a feud with Macho Man when he repossessed Macho's hat. And he also had a feud with the British Bulldog when he attempted to repossess Matilda the Bulldog. After his run with the WWE ended, he appeared in WCW in 1994, where he actually started under his legit name of Barry Darso, where he was doing the crazy gimmick, acting like he was invading the show and getting kicked out of arenas, getting arrested. But he was bailed out of a prison by Colonel Rob Parker, who wanted him to beat up Dustin Rhodes because they were in a feud. So Barry Darso took on the moniker of the Blacktop Bully. And this was a very, very short-lived gimmick because he was fired after just one match, this match being the infamous King of the Road match, where he and Dustin fought on the back of a moving flatbed truck, where both wrestlers got very, very injured and also got seen on camera blading, which was totally against WCW's no blood policy at the time. Yeah, so he's running WCW ended then. But
as if blading was the most dangerous aspect of that match.
If you've never watched the match, you've got to go. It's an absolute spectacle. How they thought it would work is beyond me. But Barry would actually return to WCW with a new gimmick, Mr. Hole-in-One, where he played an evil golfer. yeah, this was another short-lived gimmick, though, and it was quickly dropped when he took on an amnesia gimmick, and he would come onto the show every week and reprise the gimmicks of old, appearing once as Crusher Khrushchev, reappearing as Mr. Hole-in-One, and then finally returning to his blacktop bully gimmick for the rest of his wrestling career. So my first pick is the superstar that is Barry Darso.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I've always wondered, with his Repo Man gimmick, he had a little mask and a trench coat. Like, you know, he was dressed and acted like a burglar, right? It was just like walking around, like, you know, sort of shifty-eyed and just like staying out of eyesight and just like, look, I'm gonna sneak in and grab something. Have you ever seen a Repo Man? Have you ever seen someone who works in repossession? They don't go around sneaking around. Most of the people who work in repossession spend 8 hours at work and 4 hours at the gym working on their biceps. They're huge. They're enormous guys who come in and it's like, they're not going to sneak into your house. They're going to fucking knock on the door until you open. And then it's like, we're taking this. And you're like, no. And if they'll shove you around, no problem. And that's something that's always, if he's a repo man, why is he acting like a thief?
Did the tire marks on his ring gear not give it away? Did the bits of tire acting as epaulettes on his coat not tell you that he was a repo man? It makes clear sense, Warren. I don't understand what the issue is.
I think probably that's it. He got run over and he you know, a couple of screws got loose. Hell, he came back as an evil golfer down the line. So, you know.
Yeah, and that's a gimmick that's been done time and time again, lest we forget Kerwin Watt.
Right, but he wasn't an evil golfer. He was just an evil Hispanic dude who wants to be white.
Yeah, pretty much.
Suburban guy, yeah.
But, Paul, does it stay on?
You know it doesn't. you knew it wasn't going to stay on. The reason is, I think...
End the show. I'm cutting the show.
I'm not sure how you define unsuccessful. Because wow. Demolition was successful, sure. But the rest of it...
Disgust me, Mr. Talley.
He's not even the most successful evil golfer of all time, because one's been president for the last 4 years. So you can't even claim that.
Bravo. I think he has a point there, Mags.
So I'm going to replace it. I'm going to replace him with the, with his the other person who got fired as a result of that match. Was it King of the Road match? Was that what it was called?
Yeah. King of the Road.
He was obviously opposite Dustin Runnels, Dustin Rhodes.
Wow.
So that's who I'm going to put on. Because after getting sacked in that match, he went on to better things. And it's still doing better things, whereas... is Barry Darso, has he passed away?
Oh no. My God, Paul, how dare you?
I was going down a route there where I didn't want to say what's he doing these days, and if he's dead, I feel terrible.
No, he was actually part of the concussion lawsuit against WWE, one that Chris Nowinski was.
Okay. So I don't feel so bad then. Yeah, what's Barry Darso doing these days? But Dustin Runnels, he's inhabited a number of great gimmicks, a number of shabby gimmicks as well over his career. Kind of after his early forays in both WWF, back and forth WF and WCW, kind of seemed to be following his dad around when he was flitting between the companies at the time. It was WCW. He found his first momentum as the natural Dustin Rhodes. And there he won the WCW Tag Team Championships twice, once with Ricky Steamboat, once with Barry Windham, who I mentioned as part of JBL's induction. And he won two WCW US Championships as well. And then he also... And then he also took part in the infamous Shockmaster War Games match alongside Sting, Davey Boy Smith, Vader, Sid Vicious, and Harlem Heat. So he was clearly building up a really strong head of steam in WCW and clearly headed for the top there until that match you mentioned there on the back of a hay lorry or whatever it was, until he got fired alongside Barry Darso. But then, obviously, WWF pounced, saw his talent, and gave him one of, in my opinion, the great gimmicks of all time, Gold Dust. Completely refreshing character, kind of pushed the boundaries of what was acceptable at the time. Mm-hmm. Famously, he was an androgynous character. Apparently, he didn't know what that meant when he accepted the gig. and was taken by surprise when he looked it up in the dictionary. And he was obviously famously kind of unafraid to use almost a homoerotic act to get heat from his opponents, and more importantly, heat from the fans as well. Most famously against Razor Ramon, Ahmed Johnson, and Triple H. And it's Razor Ramon he defeated for his first Intercontinental Championship. I just think that gimmick, everything, the entrance was amazing. Kind of the whole idea, Marlena when she came in, smoking cigar and kind of directing what he did, the mannerisms. I think he just absolutely killed that gimmick and made it what it was, and made it a gimmick that was still popular up until the time he left WWE to go to AEW. A return to WCW would see him debut one of those more trashier characters, Seven, as Magsy told us about a few weeks ago on this podcast.
That was such a horrific gimmick.
Yeah. And then he would become the American Nightmare, which his brother would famously go on to adopt later on, or currently. Returned to WWE after the invasion, after his WCW contract obviously ended, or WCW had ended, in fact, reprised his role as Goldust, and then formed one of the great all-time comedy partnerships with Booker T. Later in the noughties, another terrible gimmick, change to Black Rain in TNA, which was just terrible thing to behold. Before, yeah, more 10 years as Goldust. And every time Goldust came back, every time WWF brought Dusting back, they wanted Goldust and the fans wanted Goldust. And he was just popular every time he came back. But now, obviously, it's finally all come full circle. And we've got the natural Dustin Rhodes back alongside Cody. And he had arguably one of the greatest matches of 2019, was it? I think it was 2019, at Double or Nothing against his brother Cody. So I think Dustin, he's had more hits than misses with his gimmicks, and he's had a fantastically successful career. So I think he's got to go in over Barry Darso, I'm afraid.
That is scandalous. When one of your gimmicks is a child
molester, then you shouldn't be allowed on this list. But there's nothing I can do about it. So apart from just be ashamed of you, Paul.
I think Dustin just needs to go away with the brief of his character and could consider it before he says yes. Clearly, maybe he didn't learn from the mistake of Goldust that he jumped straight into seven.
Maybe just ask someone to read it over. You know, what do you think?
Yeah. You know, what do these big words mean?
It's a great use of the veto, one that I'm not at all happy about. But Warren, let's go to you for your third pick. Please pick Repo Man so he can at least stay on someone's Mount Rushmore.
No, I am going to...
No.
I'm going with Ed Leslie, gentlemen.
He had about 70 gimmicks.
There you go.
You have to educate me. I don't know who he is.
Okay, here we go.
Brutus
here we
the
go.
Barber Beefcake.
There you go.
Oh,
Brutus,
right, okay.
The Barber Beefcake, whose only success, first of all, the only goal that he held during his tenure, WWF, WCW, was the WWF tag team titles with Greg the Hammer Valentine. And he wasn't even the barber at that point. He was just Brutus Beefcake, Greg the Hammer Valentine. They held the title for a hell of a long time, like close to a year. The titles for close to a year. So, you know, they big ass tag team. And then they did the gimmick switch starts. Right? Start with Brutus Beefcake, then we become Brutus the Barber Beefcake, which was very, very good for his career. That it got him super over, and everyone remembers that gimmick. Everyone. And if you don't remember it because you weren't watching at the time, you know of it. The guy who challenges people to shave their head, cut their hair if they lose a match.
With shears.
Well, yeah, he mostly used razors when it happened, you know, like electric razors, which was a smart thing to do. But that was the thing. And, you know, the whole hair thing, of course, it's a... The thing about hair in wrestling is that it's always been like this point of pride, you know, especially in Lucha, you know, where you'd have hair versus mask. And, you know, of course, we all know about how terrible it is, you know, the level of indignity it is to lose your mask in a mask versus mask match. But same thing with the hair. The hair is a big deal. It was always a big deal in wrestling. So it was nice to have him take that on. Now, here's the... He leaves WWF because Hulk Hogan leaves. And he, you know, well, even before that, he had that horrible accident, right? What was he doing? Parasailing, I think.
Yeah.
Was the activity that he was doing? What's that?
I think he was parasailing, and then he was driven into by a boat by a lady, weren't it, I think.
Yeah. And demolished his face. Yeah. And he had his comeback, and people were legitimately happy to see him return, right? Because his face was deconstructed, was just smashed to bits. So he comes back for a short while in WWE, but then Hogan jumps to WCW, brings a couple of his pals along, and Ed Leslie is his number one friend. He's the top pal. So he comes in as Brother Brutai or Bruti, I'm not quite sure. I don't remember how. And that was something. That was something. But quickly, that was very short lived. He became the more better known Butcher, no relation to the current AEW tag team, the Butcher, with which he formed the Three Faces of Fear with Kevin Sullivan and Avalanche. Avalanche was what he was called. No, what was he called then in WCW? John Tenta. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it was the Shark.
Was it the Shark in WCW?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But John Tenta, anyway. Mm-hmm. It was another guy who has multiple. Anyway. But so he does the Butcher thing, Three Faces of Fear. Then that disbands, and he becomes the man with no name. You see, he gets amnesia, not unlike your boy Barry Darsal, right? He gets amnesia, forgets who he is. But then he becomes the Zodiac, which is another one of his most memorable gimmicks, as he returns with Kevin Sullivan to create the Dungeon. You know, all the heel factory to defeat that's looking out to destroy Hulk Hogan, who just arrived, right? And then later, he joins the NWO for some reason and becomes the Booty Man. We don't know why. Why was he the Booty Man? Is it because he had a particularly luscious posterior? No, not, you know, that was Billy Gunn's thing. Is it because he liked to acquaint himself with other individuals' rear ends? Maybe, but that was never fully exploited. We don't understand why he was called the Booty Man. But yet here we were, fully grown man, wearing black and white, lots of leather, calling himself the Booty Man. Anyway, I digress. His final form, the final form of Ed Leslie, came with the arrival of the Ultimate Warrior in WCW, that shit show. He was included in this, where he was the sole member of Warrior's One Warrior Nation, right? His faction. He became the sole member of that and was known as the Disciple. And what did he do? Well, he sort of ran around with a similar trench coat to Warrior, and he was barely used because Warrior was in and out in a blink, and it was awful, awful, awful. Now, why do I want this guy, Ed Leslie, to be on my Mount Rushmore of top gimmicks, despite the fact that he never won a singles title? He never rose to prominence, never won a Royal Rumble. You know, it's like, no proper accolades. Here's a guy who's been through so many gimmicks and yet was able to foster some sort of career out of wrestling here, despite having the most moronic gimmicks, yet so memorable nonetheless, so terrible and sideshowy that despite it all, we look at them today and they're like, this is ridiculous, but in a good way. You know, not in an offensive, way in any shape or form, not in a beaver cleavage situation where you're like, this is just disgusting, you know? It's like, you guys are talking about incest. This is gross, you know? It's all just so wonderfully delightful, and it does speak to the man. And I think it is an accomplishment in and about itself to have been involved in so many high-profile angles. Let's not forget, the Dungeon of Doom was a big deal. The NWO was a big deal. And he was involved in the Warrior angle, which, again, despite the fact that it sucked, was a big deal. Despite the fact that he was involved in all those high-profile angles, he never won a title. That, my friends, Paul, Mag, is an accomplishment in and about itself.
Yep, it's a good pick. It's a really, really good pick.
It's a good choice. I
think his legacy will be that he was one of the greatest finessers of the wrestling world, that he could take a friendship with Hulk Hogan and turn that into a long-lasting,
a career,
multi-decade career. Yeah,
he was friends with the guy who he needed to be friends with, and they had a falling out years later. Okay, sure, you know, but maybe he saw the writing on the wall at the same time. You know, we like to poke fun at it at Leslie, at Bruce Beefcake, but maybe he's just smarter than a lot of people gave him credit for. know, and maybe he's just like, look, I'm going to continue making money if I hang around Hogan. Just as simple as that.
It worked.
It worked.
And we remember him. And like I said, he's been involved in such big angles. I mean, you didn't even mention the barbershop incident. I mean, he was an integral part of that. So
that's right.
It's a great pick.
Sure it is. Yeah.
Paul,
yeah.
What pick am I potentially vetoing of yours?
Well, speaking of being friends with the right people, I don't think it's a cynical friendship, but he certainly benefited from it. I've gone for Charles Wright.
You motherfucker.
Is this one going to be tough to beat?
Next pick. Yeah,
was it?
It was going to be my next pick, yeah.
Okay.
wow. You've got political with your vetoes, Paul.
unsurprisingly, kind of someone who is such a close friend to The Undertaker is really good at pulling off gimmicks, as old Mark Calloway was. It was The Undertaker who kind of angled for Charles Wright to be brought into WWF back in the 90s. And I think when Charles Wright came in, he pulled off four memorable kind of iconic gimmicks. And obviously he started off with Papa Shango, who was a voodoo villain. Kind of, I guess, similar traits to The Undertaker, coming out to billows of smoke and messing with the arena lights and bringing that mystical edge to the WWE. Famously, obviously, missed his cue at WrestleMania 8, failing to break up the Hogan pin on Sid Vicious after the leg drop, so Sid had to kick out himself. But it still led him to probably Papa Shango's most famous feud, which was with the Ultimate Warrior that came out of that match. And it's probably testament to the man that even though he blew a moment on the biggest stage of all, Vince didn't fire him there and then. So I just remember when he was casting his spells on Ultimate Warrior. I remember it terrified me at the time. I'm not sure what age I would have been, but it's certainly something I look back and remember now as something that scared the shit out of me, basically. So that's pretty cool. Unfortunately, due to kind of other circumstances, injuries, politics, whatnot, I think the character of Papa Shango didn't get all the breaks that were actually planned for him. Perhaps there was a world title match in there for him.
He had a match against Bret Hart for the title.
Oh, he did, but I think he did one against Warrior, wasn't he?
Well, actually, it was actually meant to go up against Sid, but Sid got fired from the company, and that's when they transitioned into the Warrior storyline. But it was meant to be a big player.
Yeah. So who knows how far he would have gone if things didn't kind of conspire against him. But apparently it wasn't a gimmick that was massively popular with fans, even though I look back on it quite fondly. And Wright was released. But it wasn't long until he returned again, this time as Karma Mustafa, which apparently was...
No. It was just Karma when he first came back.
Just Karma? Okay.
It was Mustafa when he joined the Nation.
Right, okay. Just Karma then, which was, I think, like a kind of a UFC fighter gimmick.
Yeah.
Again, short-lived, but he was in there mixing it up with kind of the upper echelon of talent. Again, this time his friend, The Undertaker, who he stole the urn from and melted down into a necklace.
Yep.
It's probably his biggest act. But again, release. He got released yet again. But similar to Dustin, he was pulled back. Clearly a popular guy amongst WWF management. He returned this time as part of the Nation Domination, as you rightfully said, as Karma Mustafa this time, playing kind of an integral part in that whole gang warfare bit of 1997.
Oh, that's one of my favorite.
I loved it. Wrestling. I loved it.
Yeah, the Gang Rules era.
Gang Rules. I wish they'd bring back. Some more kind of stables along that, and Nation Domination really cool. I really like them as a stable. Mm-hmm. Then out of that, once Nation Domination had fallen apart, probably came his most popular gimmick, which was the colourful pimp, accompanied to the ring every night by his Ho Train. The Godfather. Very properly came out, and it won him his first title as an Intercontinental Champion. And kind of this gimmick now that returns every now and again in Royal Rumbles or backstage segments, because it is a fondly remembered gimmick that Charles Wright really made his own, and it's actually the gimmick that he got inducted into the Hall of Fame on. But he also had time to become the Good Father as part of Right to Censor, which he was originally a target of Right to Censor because of his obviously immoral behaviour. Lost the
pimping ways.
His pimping ways. He lost to Bull Buchanan in a match in which he had to, if he lost, he had to give up his pimping ways. So he joined Right to Censor as part of that. And then, as I said, forevermore, kind of Godfather will turn up when you least expect it. More often than not, showing up to talk his old pals out of settling down. Most famously did this while Teddy Long was getting married in the ring to Crystal. Godfather came out, tried to convince Teddy Long to ditch Crystal at the altar and go back to having fun with him and Farouk. Teddy Long turned him down, but Godfather left with all of the male guests of the wedding, following the whole train out of the service.
Classic.
I quite like, I watched it earlier. I quite like, you could see CM Punk really wondering why the hell he's part of this. And yeah, like I said, he would go on to be inducted into Hall of Fame in 2016 as the Godfather. And in 2018, I think the last time we saw him, Mark Henry and the Godfather met up backstage to discuss how they'd all grown up. And Godfather, although he was still wearing the gear, he'd given up pimping, just as Mark Henry had given up being sexual chocolate. And I'm sure it's not the last time we've seen him, but that was a fun little moment, I think, on Raw 25.
It's a great pick, and I can't veto it because it was going to be literally my next pick.
You got anything to add?
No, I think you covered it really, really well. It was literally the first person I actually started to research when we decided on this topic. So,
yeah, me too.
Great pick. And I think the Papa Shango character was actually based on a James Bond villain, Baron Samedi.
Baron Samedi, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, great pick, Paul, and great avoidance of a veto, you absolute...
I've won the veto battle again.
Yes, you have.
I'm going into the Hall of Fame soon.
Warren, let's go to you and complete your Mount Rushmore.
Mick Foley. I think this is the guy. I think you really can't have, you know, a Mount Rushmore of successful wrestlers who've been successful with multiple gimmicks, so on and so forth, and not have him on it. From his beginnings in World Class to the death matches, was starting, of course, as Cactus Jack, right? And that's how he made his name. Cactus Jack, win World Class, and then really cementing who he was in FMW. All those years. That's where he became part of the circle of kings of death matches back then in Onita's old promotion. His fights with Terry Funk over there were, of course, absolutely legendary, and with Wing Canamera as well. I don't think he ever fought Onita outside of a tag team or a six man tag or something like that. Because I think at that point Onita had retired anyway, but he fought Hayabusa, established his legend over there. On North American shores, well, you know, hardcore wrestling started to appear a little more. Of course, like he did a stint in WCW, of course, that we all know. He won the tag titles again as Cactus Jack with Kevin Sullivan, but. The whole FMW stuff with coupled with what was happening in ECW at the time as well, really, really solidified who Cactus Jack was. Because he had his hardcore matches here on North American soil under Paul Heyman, won the ECW Tag Team Championships with Mikey Whipwreck. But then, of course, the big deal was him coming over, finally signing with WWF, but creating an entirely new gimmick for him in Mankind. And it's interesting because I think there is a parallel to be made here with Mr. Wright, with Charles Wright, with Papa Shango, because clearly the Mankind gimmick was created to have something for Undertaker to do. Create this insane weirdo that hangs out in boiler rooms, that's, you know, that has that same type of darkness. I think this is what kind of what they wanted to do with Papa Shango as well, but oopsie poopsie, things happened for Charles Wright as Paul went through, and that never materialized. So that's it. So that's essentially how I feel the Mankind gimmick came into business and quickly became extremely memorable, but not necessarily, sure, the matches, but the portrayal of it, right? It's what Mick put into, and I'm talking about early Mankind, right? Not late, you know, Mr. Socko and stuff like that. But we'll get to that. The early portrayal that he made of him, you know, pulling his hair out and the voice, the how he acted bent. There was something that Mick really infused into Mankind that made him troubling, worrisome, and then coupled with the insane stuff that he'd do in the ring, and you're like, well, okay, this character is just nuts. Mm-hmm. This character is just absolutely nuts. So that stuff would happen, but then, you know, stuff would happen. Mankind sort of broke. Next thing you know, you have Dude Love showing up on television, who is like the happy-go-lucky version of Mick Foley / Mankind at the time. Which was actually, if I remember the story correctly, Dude Love was like Mick's first wrestling gimmick, but not when he was wrestling, like when he was pretending, like in his living room, to be a wrestler. You know, he's like, I'm Dude Love. And
He first was Dude Love when he was jumping off his own garage roof off the mattresses. Yeah.
Right. Like, not when he was an actual professional wrestler, when he was just doing backyard stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. So it was a callback to that. And again, this worked, because the idea was like, okay, Mankind, that's when the mask started to slip, you know? It's like, are we looking at Mankind, or are we looking at Mick Foley, who is this guy who is behind Mankind, but now he's sort of cracked and he wants to be this babyface crowd favorite, Dude Love, dancing, smiling, you know, colorful, psychedelic, you know? Everyone's like, what the hell am I watching right now?
Yeah, the reason he actually introduced the Dude Love character was when Steve Austin refused to have Mankind as his tag team partner.
As his tag team partner. That's right. But there was that part where he was, the mask was slipping, right? It's like, who exactly are we looking at? Are we looking at a guy, or are we looking at a character? And this was unprecedented at the time. And I remember on the message boards, everyone was confused. Like, what are we watching? What is this? You know, it's like he can just switch gimmicks whenever he wants. Sure. And that was the genius behind it. And frankly, I'm going to use the word genius, because I don't think it would have been as successful with anyone else than Mick Foley pulling it off. I think the reason why it worked is because it was Mick Foley putting in the effort to make it happen, right?
Yep.
And then he goes back to Mankind. We're still talking humans. Goes back to Mankind, but not the same Mankind. Now we have a Mankind who is affable, jokey,
goofy,
holding on to the naivete that was him, but you know, the sort of impressionable, manipulatable. That's not a word. That can be manipulated. Thank you very much. And that's it. So he was adding his own in there, and that's brilliant at the same time, taking an established gimmick but switching it, making it into something else. We still get the references, the mask, the abuse to your body, we get it all. But then you have Mr. Socko, you have him winning his first WWF title on Monday Night Raw. We all know the story. Tony Schiavone over at Nitro saying that'll put butts in seats, and yet it did. Everyone switched over to see it. I still get fucking chills every time I see that main event. I cry. It was, for me, it's one of the greatest moments I ever experienced as a wrestling fan. The King of the Ring tumble, of course. And then it all comes back. It all circles all the way back around to Cactus Jack. Cactus Jack makes his return. He even shows up with Terry Funk as Chainsaw Charlie. But, it all circles back to his original gimmick, the thing that got him over, the thing that got him known, I should say. But I think ultimately, the main gimmick, and this, I think this is the real, true, sheer brilliance of Mick Foley and his gimmicks is the idea that Mick Foley himself, that Mick Foley is the gimmick. Yeah. Mick Foley is a guy who has multiple personalities. It's a guy who has multiple characters, multiple visions of himself. And that's what we've grown to understand about Mick Foley as a performer, is that this guy can be three other guys. He just has to decide which one he wants to be. And yeah. There's really four faces to Mick Foley ultimately. And that's what's fantastic about it. And that's what I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it's something that Matt Hardy is very close to, you know, to a certain extent. But I don't think that Hardy's previous gimmicks have been infused with that same type of personality performance that only a guy like Mick Foley could have delivered. And success throughout, world champion, tag team champion, hardcore champion, TNA world champion. I mean, all of it. He's had success, gold everywhere he's been, regardless of the gimmick.
It's a perfect pick, and it was also going to be my final pick for our Mount Rushmore, and it's for everything that you've just said. There's no way that we could have a Mount Rushmore of wrestlers with gimmicks without including Mick Foley.
Absolutely.
The fact that this guy entered a Royal Rumble with three totally different characters is just a testament to how good of a character worker Mick Foley was. Just so, so good. And I think we have to give a lot of props to Jim Ross as well, because he really sold the fact that this guy was Mick Foley.
Yeah.
And that these were three different personas. And I think it was Jim who coined the phrase, the three faces of Foley and stuff like Mrs. Foley's baby boy, because he was really kind of breaking the fourth wall that this guy wasn't, it was a character, and he brought out whichever character needed to be brought out at the time. If he was really being destroyed by the heels, he'd return to the vicious Cactus Jack. If he was playing a goofy character in the tag team with The Rock, we got Mankind. If he was being more of himself, he was being the Dude Love character. Yeah, so I can't not have Mick Foley on our Mount Rushmore. So yeah, he would have been my pick as well.
I agree, and it's a really good point. The Royal Rumble is a really good moment, and the thing is that we all popped. Mm-hmm. Like every time we were like, oh shit, and no one groaned and no one was like, ugh, this is so lame. And I was like, no, it worked. It worked because they had magic with Mick. Mm-hmm. There's good ideas for gimmicks, right? But if you don't have the wrestler to pull it off, it will come off as contrived and won't connect. Mick had that. Look, it's the same thing with Undertaker, right? It's the same thing with Undertaker. Anyone else but Mark Calloway would not have been what it became. Absolutely not.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a perfect way to round off our Mount Rushmores. This has been an absolutely amazing episode. What we need from you now, sir, is we need a topic for a future guest. What kind of Mount Rushmore would you like to hear about?
I would like to hear how about a Mount Rushmore of...
Not say of above average Mark standard.
Of above average wrestlers. how about a Mount... Here's something that might be fun. A Mount Rushmore of NWA champions. Have you guys done that before?
No, we certainly have not.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, that's a great one. Warren, this has been brilliant, as I knew it would be, and it's a shame that it took so long for you to be on the show, and I hope it won't be that long before you are back on. Let all our listeners know about, if they don't know you already, which I cannot understand if they don't, where they can get hold of you on social media and about all your many, many, many content outlets.
YouTube.com. Let's start with that.
Just go on YouTube. Is there? Is it everywhere? The Slayer. I absolutely love the Slayer. I think it's a real breath of fresh air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Mags. You're not so bad yourself, pal. I sort of fell in love with Paul today. I'm not gonna lie. But YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes is where all the magic happens. I have a podcast that I record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Right there. So if you want to come in and join the live chat, that's always fantastic. It's always a good time recapping the week in wrestling and good times. So I also do pre-shows before Raw, before the Wednesday Night Wars, and before SmackDown. So 7:30 p.m. Just a quick half hour to get run down what's on in store for us. So I do that there as well. Prediction shows when there's pay-per-views. Post shows on New Japan shows really early in the morning. Stuff like that. All sorts of things. YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. You can also get all the podcasts on your favorite podcast application. I'm there as well. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at Mr. Warren Hayes. How about that?
Perfect. And Paul, your favorite time of the week, sir.
Yeah, well, you can follow us on Twitter too. We're at Dej Kirkby and at Rain Counter, and we're both at Badlands Pod. And you can listen to us every Thursday. If you go onto your podcast provider and subscribe to the Chairshot Media Group, you can also get lots of other lovely podcasts featuring our voices. If you also subscribe to Visionaries Global Media, Shooting the Sportsish, and Five Nerds Go, subscribe to all of those. Give us ratings on your podcast provider, if you'd be so kind. And we'll be back again next Thursday for another Mount Rushmore. Stay safe and always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.